Welcome back, dear listeners, to another episode of Be Inspired, your ultimate resource for finding inspiration and a place where we dive into the stories and insights of creative individuals who have forged their own paths and found inspiration in unexpected places. I'm your host, Francesca, and today we have the pleasure of welcoming a truly inspiring artist, Audra Townsend. Now, if I might share a little bit about Audra, she is a free-spirited, British-born, Jamaican-Canadian abstract and mixed-media artist who just so happens to be based right here in Toronto, and her work is a testament to the power of creativity in overcoming life's challenges and embracing one's true self. Audra's belief in art as a manifestation of human curiosity has led her to explore the intricate relationship between creativity and, I would say, the human experience. As a trained sociocultural anthropologist, she brings a rich understanding of societal dynamics and cultural nuances into her artistic expression. It was interesting to learn her journey into the world of art actually began as a means to overcome writer's block of all things and social anxiety that evolved into a profound exploration of identity and self-acceptance. She uses this intuitive and tactile art form to reflect her deeply personal approach to creativity, inviting viewers to experience art in a way that goes way beyond the visual. We'll hear more from Audra about her artistic process, from the initial spark of inspiration to the finished piece, and we'll explore how she transforms her perceived disadvantages into unique advantages, crafting artwork that is as authentic as it is captivating. I'm sure this podcast is going to leave you feeling inspired and uplifted. So let's get started. Welcome, Audra. How are you?
I'm good. And thank you for having me.
You're so welcome, Audra. I know that was a really long introduction, but did I miss anything?
Oh, no, that was great. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Okay, well, if you're ready, let's get started because I have lots of questions for you. So let's dive deep. Here we go. So, Audra, you've described your art as a manifestation of human curiosity about the material world. So can you share with us just a little bit about how you see this connection between art and our innate curiosity?
To start, what I would have to say first is that we never just approach a canvas with a blank state of mind.
Okay.
Always thinking about something. As an artist, I'm thinking about what has just occurred in my day. Maybe there was something that caught my attention. Maybe it was something in the news that had an impact on me, and how, you know, it changed my perspective of the world or something like that. There's always something that you are approaching your work, your canvas, with, like, you're never a blank slate. It's not a blank slate.
So you're saying there's always something that inspires you to put on canvas.
It might not be inspiring.
Okay.
It might be something that is a problem to
solve. Okay.
be a worry, a fear, anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So when you come to the canvas, there's something there that you are working with. There's I'm calling it a spectrum. There's this like an invisible
right.
thing is driving your motivation to paint.
Something invisible that you bring into being is, I think, what you're saying as well. Yeah.
So when you think about it, art is how we express our experiences in the material world.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever we experience on the outside, we internalize, and then we are, I'm going to say, problem solving in a way, in order to understand what has just taken place. And that connection, art and our curiosity, is essential to what it means to be human. When you think about that, think about cave paintings. What did the first humans paint? They were painting about their hunting expeditions, eh? Wild animals. They were painting about flowers, you know, different plants, and you name it. And their hand, my famous was this cave painting in the south, I think it's the south of France, can't remember what it's called, but it's pretty famous cave paintings with the handprints, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I'm not quite too sure what materials they were using in order to do it, but they were blowing, they had the paint in the mouth and just blowing the paint
right
around their hands to get almost like a stencil type of an image of their hand. Mm-hmm. It's our curiosity, like art and creativity is what makes us human. We are ingesting the outside world. We are thinking about it, trying to understand it, and our way of doing that is through problem solving, and creativity is basically problem solving. So
Okay, and you are a self-taught artist with a background in sociocultural anthropology. So tell us, how has your academic training then influenced your artistic style and the themes you explore in your work?
So that is a really good question. My anthropology training is basically the lens in which I view the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it has an impact. It will never go away. After, you know, undergraduate studies and graduate studies in anthropology, that's the lens. That's how I view the world.
Okay.
To explain, okay, my field of anthropology is called social cultural anthropology, which studies humanity from a holistic perspective. It studies human diversity while also looking for what makes us all the same. And when you think about what makes us the same, you have to think in terms of like the social structure. Different cultures have social structures. All cultures have social structures. There's a historical perspective to the culture. There's a political perspective. There's an economic, et cetera. And there's ideas, you know, from all of those things, different ideas, behaviors, and norms shape the individual who belongs within those different societies. And what people need to think about is their structure. The social, the historical, the political, economical shapes the ideas and behaviors of individuals. There's a structure. There's a structure that is imposed on everybody. And one major kind of light bulb moment for myself was during COVID, during the lockdown. What was missing was people on the street. The cars were missing, the people were missing, the dogs were missing, everybody, the bicycles were missing. And what you were able to see was the stoplights, the red, yellow, and green stoplights, the walk symbol. You were able to see the road markings, the yellow lines, the white lines. The sidewalks, the trees, you know, all structure that regulate us in public space. All of these things shape our behavior in public space. Green means go, red means stop, yellow means, you know, start to slow down, you know what I mean?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Walk on the sidewalk, mm-hmm. drive on the road. It's structure. It's an imposed structure. It's not natural.
Right.
It doesn't occur in the natural world.
Right.
It is part of living in our social structures.
Right.
It's regulating our behavior. And COVID, you know, did it, our behavior, we were restricted. We couldn't go into that public space. We were restricted to our own homes. I produced an entire series of art, almost like a nostalgia for you know, missing being out in public space, mm-hmm. urban organic. Mm-hmm. And in that, it's all about structure, missing cars that come off the highway at 5 a.m. in the morning. From where I was living, I heard, you know, that's the start of the workday.
Mm-hmm.
All of these cars coming off the QE,
mm-hmm.
or the Gardener, I'm not sure what it's called. Yeah, the Gardener, coming off of the Gardener and making that humming sound. And it wasn't there during COVID. And there was also morning rush hour.
Right.
Things just start at a certain time. Everybody just kind of piles out into the street.
Mm-hmm.
Onto the streetcars, onto the buses, walking, you name it, because they're all going in to work. And then it's the same thing again after work. Oh, and I should point out at lunchtime as well, too. So right. We're regulated. And urban organic was just I missed that. Mm-hmm. It was a rhythm. rhythm to everyday life that was missing during COVID. So yes, I had dedicated an entire series to that. I also, using my anthropological lens, I also started to think about borders because of what we were seeing on television during this COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Trump and his border wall.
Okay.
Migrants coming up from Central America.
Right.
And they were facing restricted borders. They mm-hmm. weren't allowed to cross. You know, Trump was
mm-hmm.
all for his border wall.
Right.
And I started to paint about these enclosed spaces, spaces people could not, you know, pass through, different shapes and colors. And the theme actually was like enclosure. I think it was the 17th century in Britain when landowners started to fence up their properties. I started to think about that.
Okay.
And that was part of my urban, my ordinary effects series, which I touched on things that make, you know, the shared experiences that have an impact on not just the individual, but on everybody.
Right.
Everybody shares the same kind of expression. Shame shares the same kind of emotions because of a certain thing impacting everybody. And that was, you know, just seeing this refugee thing, people trying to cross the border to make a new life for themselves and were being restricted. The other thing I'm currently working on is migrants and migration. The emancipatory experience of being able to move,
right.
Restricted space.
Mm-hmm.
And I am having a blast with that one.
And that's something you're currently working on?
That is something
you're currently working on. So COVID really heightened your sense of creativity, because it seems like you had the two series that came out, the urban organic, and then you said you had started to think about borders. So your journey into art then began as a means to actually overcome writer's block, which I thought was really interesting. as well as social anxiety. So I wanted to know, given what we were just talking about, COVID, being isolated and locked down, and then, you know, learning that you had writer's block and overcoming social anxiety, how has the process of creating art helped you navigate these challenges? And what advice might you give others who would be facing similar obstacles? Because obviously having writer's block and social anxiety affects many, many people.
I have to say, creating the art kind of makes you step back a little bit. The kind of art that I do is abstract, mm-hmm, and okay. Abstract is, you know, it's almost like playing. Mm-hmm. And in order to produce effective abstract, you've got to let go of that fear and enjoy experimenting. My issue was going back and forwards between panic and procrastination. A lot of people experience that, eh? Mm-hmm. You because of this anxiety, mm-hmm, and you name it, you go back and forward, right, between, oh my gosh, I have to get this done. And then there's a procrastination, you can't get it done. You know, you're in such a state, mm-hmm, that start trying to do something else instead of what you're supposed to be doing. What I found was that my fear was like feeling like I'm an imposter.
The imposter syndrome then.
Mm-hmm. And that I would be found out. I grew up as the dyslexic, undiagnosed dyslexic, and then later in life with the ADD.
Okay.
And in, you know, from my background, those are things people didn't want their children to share or their family members to share.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of hide it.
Right.
And there's always that fear of being found out.
Mm-hmm.
If you produce something not of good quality, you're going to get found out. The painting was so freeing. It's non-judgmental. Like, you have to enjoy experimenting with color, textures, and making a mess on the paper. Like, you're allowed to make a mess. I was the kid during Easter time. You remember the drugstores used to have those art coloring contests?
Right.
I was a messy kid. Like, I couldn't draw in between the lines. Part of the dyslexic, part of the dyslexia is dysgraphia in there,
mm-hmm,
where your handwriting is terrible. Like, it's just, I'm going to say like a two-year-old painting, or a two-year-old trying to write.
Okay.
With abstract, abstract is beautiful. You don't, that people, that's what you're trying to create. You're trying to scribble. You're trying to not paint within the lines. Painting within the lines is almost like a conformity. You're conforming to what society wants you to be.
Right, right.
And with the abstract, you're producing art that is authentic to who you are as a person, not somebody else. This is who you are. So it's freeing. It's of very course. Liberating.
Right.
And what I would do or say to somebody else experiencing the same thing,
mm-hmm,
do something creative. You need to do something creative. You cannot be objective.
Yes.
Creative without being creative. The creative process is problem solving. And as I said earlier, it's how we make sense of our world. And in order to make sense of our world, you need to give yourself the permission to sit back and enjoy the journey, you know, experiment.
Right,
try
right.
This, try that. And when you do that, like when you allow yourself to, you know, just enjoy the process.
Right, right.
It creates fear. So, yeah, it would, I'd say to other people experiencing the same thing. Mm-hmm. Do something. If you can bake, you can cook, you can sew, crochet, garden, do something creative to allow yourself
yes. the luxury of course. Mm-hmm. And it should be said that it's completely okay to color outside the lines and be unconventional if you're in the moment and that is what you're feeling. Because I like what you said earlier, in creating abstract art is like playing, and it's where you have to let go of that fear. So I think that's great advice for people that are facing similar obstacles. And you know, your use of intuitive and tactile art forms is very intriguing. Can you tell us a little bit more how these approaches influence your creative process and the message that you're trying to convey through your art?
I have to, so to respond to that question, what I would say is that it's first important to understand what intuitive and tactile art forms are.
Okay.
The intuitive style of art, or abstract art, mm-hmm. is let the painting. The painting is basically painting itself. Like you're mm-hmm. you're bringing your experiences to that painting. Yes, but you're not restricting the flow of the painting by imposing like an artificial.
Okay. Okay.
To that painting, you're letting the painting dictate where it needs to go. And that's why I think of this like spiral, like a specter, this invisible force that is driving, or invisible energy that is driving the painting.
Mm-hmm.
That's the intuitive part of yourself.
Okay.
And it's when you allow yourself to think intuitively,
mm-hmm.
intuitive, it's also freeing. Like you tap into your authentic self. You're tapping into something a little bit more than who you are. And I'm going to use the word, it's almost spiritual as well too.
Okay. And that's the intuitive. And what about the tactile side of it?
With the tactile, the mm-hmm. tactile is like it imposes like a sense of touch. A tactile art, there's like a texture to it mm-hmm. that makes you want to touch it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like a taboo when you think about art.
Yes.
Art, you're not supposed to touch, you're supposed to stand back. There's mm-hmm. This barrier between you and the art. And if you try to get close to one of the master, well-known classical paintings,
mm-hmm.
you're most likely going to get arrested. With mm-hmm. tactile art forms makes you want to touch it. There's a texture to it.
It sure does. Yeah.
Inviting you to touch it. So what I say to everybody, you know, like when I'm standing there and I'm presenting my art at mm-hmm. exhibitions or art fairs, I tell people to touch it, you know. It's got layers of the varnish on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be white, you know, like the art can be white.
Okay. And you're okay with that?
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Touch it.
Yeah.
Reach out, touch it, because you're allowed. It's not going to disintegrate.
Right.
And when people are engaged with art on that level,
mm-hmm.
it's more meaningful as well.
Oh, I completely agree. It really does make a huge difference. And I know that you've mentioned turning your disadvantages into advantages through painting. And I'm wondering if you could maybe share with us a specific instance where you felt this particular transformation most profoundly reflected in your work.
Growing up dyslexic, I learned to overcome my challenges
mm-hmm.
through workarounds. Like I do things differently. When somebody tells you to think outside the box,
mm-hmm.
I my response back is, you know what, I have never been in the box. You know, I've always had to do things differently. Growing up, my challenge was learning. So I had to basically learn differently from everybody else, mm-hmm. teach me how to learn differently. Mm-hmm. And it took quite a lot of effort, but it has made me competitive in... Well, it made me competitive from a business sense, and mm-hmm. in my artwork, it has, like, I've developed my own style. This is my style. Nobody else paints like I do, because I have a hard time following exact instructions. It always turns out to be something completely different than what the art instructor was telling me to do.
Right, right. And so then you have found your own uniqueness in your style of art, right?
That's correct. It is. This is my style. I've seen other people copy what I do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really unique. When people start to copy you, it's like amazing.
It's the ultimate compliment, though, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I use, you know, the underpadding of carpets as a form of texture, to texturize the paint. Mm-hmm. And now I'm seeing that pop up all over the place, eh? Mm. Yeah, once people figured out what I was using, they, you know, they're enjoying including it into their own artwork.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So dyslexia and ADD are often viewed as hindrances, yet you have found a way to leverage them in your own artistic expression. So I wonder how you think embracing the differences has really contributed to the uniqueness of your artistic voice.
Okay, so when you say embracing my differences,
yes,
I am, like, it's, I would she, I'd say leverage. I'm leveraging these differences.
Okay.
I am leveraging them by not trying to restrict them.
And continue learning.
I'm not trying to restrict them. I'm right. using them.
Right.
To create my own style of art.
Right.
And by doing that, it's nobody else can produce what I produce. This is me. They, mm-hmm. they can mm-hmm. some of my techniques. Mm-hmm. They won't have the same, like, they will never have the same finished products as I.
Right.
Together, my art will always be, you know, this is Audra's style.
Yes, of course. And I've seen a little bit of your work, and I think it is really just so beautiful, so different, definitely unique. You have your own style, as all artists do. There's just something very interesting about the pieces that you create. I mean, your artwork is characterized by a very dense network of crisscrossing lines. It has varied shapes and, like, earthy textures. So I'm just wondering what draws you to these particular elements, and what are you hoping viewers will experience when they're engaging with your pieces?
I'm just going back to what I said about movement and space.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Two themes in there. Being able to move freely through space and right. also being restricted. I started, when I first started to paint and, you know, going through the lockdown during COVID,
right.
it was, we were restricted. We weren't able to move freely through space.
Uh-huh.
And the way I was, like, I kept drawing boxes and lines and in between of those different boxes were different colors. And when you think of the paintings as if you were looking down onto, like, a landscape,
mm-hmm.
you'd see the land all carved into these different parcels that belonged to other people, the restricted spaces, eh? And I did quite a lot of that. That I'm going to say was a psychological. That was a psychological manifestation of situation at the time of COVID. Now it's my thoughts are they landed on being able to move freely. The feeling of joy of being able to move freely through these different spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to express that, it's fluid. You know, like you have to show fluid kind of movement in the paintings. And that has, you know, it's easy for me to paint because it's an expression of joy when mm-hmm. I'm painting these things.
Okay.
Like a celebration.
Oh, I love that, like a celebration. And so I'm wondering then, because you've pretty much walked us through your creative process, but would you say that your creative process is one that's reflective? For you, that's going back to the source, where your inspiration is coming from to bring your art that you're feeling to life. Because, and I say reflective because you've talked about the nostalgia series that was created during COVID. You've talked about where you started thinking about borders during this time, painting those enclosed spaces. And then even now with what you're onto, migrants and migration, would you say that your creative process is reflective from that initial spark of inspiration to your finished artwork?
I like the term reflective. I would agree. I'm mm-hmm. going to say yes. And I would expand on that as well, too, by saying that, yes, I am reflective, reflecting on the present. I'm reflecting on what's currently happening around me mm-hmm. in the world. I'm also thinking about that and comparing it. I'm also comparing it to the past. I'm also a Jamaican family historian.
Oh, are you? I didn't know that. Okay.
I'm an avid Jamaican family historian. I've been researching my family history since 2010. And a lot of work was done with my grandmother, learning about my grandmother's family.
Okay.
And so I reflect back on what I've learned, what I've heard from her, and also compare it to what's currently happening now. And I'm gonna say there's a bit of nostalgia in there as well, too. Not based on my own lived experiences, but the lived experiences of my ancestors, what they experienced. When I say the nostalgia, I'm thinking a little bit more analytical. I'm doing that comparison.
Mm-hmm.
And I am also thinking about how the past and the present is informing me. How it informs myself, how it informs my art, what I want to turn around and teach somebody else.
Okay.
So it's that new. It's reflective. Like I'm reflecting on the right. past and the present. I'm mm-hmm. analyzing that. And then presenting like a new narrative.
Yes. Would you say that's how you maintain a sense of balance between the intuition and technique? Because I'm curious about that when I look at your work. There's just something that always looks so, maybe the right word is measured. It's almost like it's measured, but I think that just comes intuitively.
It's okay. So there is that intuitive nature
mm-hmm.
to the artwork. The intuitiveness is definitely there.
Mm-hmm.
The balance is what makes a good story.
Okay.
When you see how the composition is put together,
uh-huh.
there's like I have to guide the viewer through the painting in order for them to understand the story that I'm trying to tell them,
oh, okay.
or for them to take away their own interpretation of the painting.
Right, right.
Of guidance. So the balance is done with color. It's done with the color. You've got your tint tone and your tint tone and shade.
Mm-hmm.
You've got your very intense colors. You've got your very light kind of colors. My blue, my yellow, my what else is in there? It's almost like an orangey, like peachy kind of an orangey color.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's done with the balance of colors, and it's also done with the positioning. It's my earlier paintings were all across the board. They were horizontal. When I say horizontal, it's, you know, they covered the entire canvas, and you're basically going from left to right. My new compositions are about movement, space, and they're swimming. There's almost like a to the composition. So you're swimming, you're moving through this I'm going to say the negative white space. And when I say negative white space, when I think about migrants and migration, it's there's like a freedom in the painting. It's emancipating to be able to move mm-hmm. through what was once restricted
right.
space, restricted to white Europeans. And there's a joy, like there's almost like a celebration.
You bring it back to joy and celebration, and I find that quite beautiful. And I know that your paintings, just from the little that I have seen, they seem to offer both a physical and a visual stimulation to viewers. So I wanted to know how you approach that interplay between the sensory experiences in your work.
I really pay a lot of attention to that, the physical and the visual.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to ensure the person is engaged from not just like the visual perspective, but also from the point where, yes, they can touch the painting. They can see, like, there's something there. There's a kind of texture there.
Mm-hmm.
They should be able to touch it. So it's basically offering them, like, the painting needs to have that kind of character.
I like that. Yes, that's a great word for it. Character. Mm-hmm.
It's not just like the visual texture, but there's physical texture.
Yes, of course.
And
it's like hitting all the modalities, whether it's a visual, we don't have auditory here, but you've got that sense of touch as well as the visual aspects, right?
Exactly. I did a sponsored paint through this, I'm going to say, corporation. They produced a set of paints that had a smell to them as well.
Okay.
Made from natural ingredients.
Okay.
Mostly fruits. So when you smell orange, the orange smelled like orange.
Okay.
So it would be nice to have more opportunities like that in order to include more sensory experiences within the painting. That would be the sense of smell. You get the sense of smell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I also like to try, you know, describing the painting. Nowadays, when you are having a meeting, City of Toronto has their staff describe, you know, what is happening in their, you know, on their Zoom meetings.
Mm-hmm.
It's in audio. It's really interesting to experience because it's kind of distracting as well too.
Mm-hmm.
when you're having a Zoom meeting and then the meeting's also being described, what the person looks like is being described. But I think once people get used to things like that, right, it adds a different layer of...
Definitely adds another layer.
Definitely. Yeah, and I think that's needed. Somebody else, yes, get a touch in there.
Right.
There's an opportunity to include smell. There's also an opportunity to include the sound, like the audio. And that's quite interesting. I think we have a lot of opportunities open to us, and I think we just have to use them.
Yes, I agree. I completely agree. And, you know, as someone who offers commissioned pieces, Audra, how do you navigate the fine line between capturing a client's vision and then maintaining your own artistic integrity? Like, can you share maybe any memorable experiences from working on any commissions? Does anything come to mind?
Oh, there's a lot of things that come to mind.
Yeah.
So here is, to be frank,
yes,
I've not done a commissioned piece as yet.
Uh-huh.
I approached to do many commissioned pieces.
Okay.
And I've been stumped. Can you paint Batman for my 3-year-old son's birthday party?
Okay.
My dog, can you paint a portrait?
Mm-hmm.
Can you do all sorts of these things that I don't do?
Mm-hmm. Do you find that sense of anxiousness wells up inside you?
It does. And to just to test how serious a person is about what they want me to paint.
Yes.
There's this nice thing called an artist contract. And when I say, okay, I will try to do that for you, let's put an artist contract together to see, you know, what we can agree to, right, before I actually start painting. And before I start painting, and then after I finish painting, you saying, that's not what I wanted. So when I talk to them about putting together the artist agreement for the painting, they shut down because it's too much work. It's too much of a bother for them to go through. It's not just, you know, them asking me to.
Right. Commission. Yeah. And contracts are there for a reason. And that very reason. That's, I think, something that can be an absolute saving grace, so that you're not wasting your time and you're not putting yourself in a situation where you actually are being creative and not giving somebody quite what they were hoping for. So avoiding situations like that at all costs, I think contracts are great for that.
Mm-hmm. I will get my commission piece. I am open to it.
But the right time, the right one is going to come along, and you're going to jump at the chance because you're just going to know it's the right thing to do.
Exactly.
So tell me, where can we see you exhibit next?
I've got, I put in my submission for the Halton Black History Awareness Society. I'm hoping to be exhibiting there in July through,
that'll be the end of July, probably going into early September. That's for the Emancipation Art Exhibition. So looking forward to definitely having you go through that process, and hopefully we'll see some of your pieces at the Helsin Gallery in Halton Hills. Yeah, so that's one of the places. And is there anywhere prior to July?
Okay, so prior to July, there is an Artscape Young Place downtown.
Yep.
I love Artscape. Mm-hmm. I want to participate in their event. I'm in the process of putting out my application for that.
Oh, lovely.
The events were phenomenal. It's almost... I'm going to say street level engagement with the Toronto arts community.
Fabulous.
And also energizing, always energizing. So I always love participating in that. There is another event I'm preparing for, but that doesn't happen until August. It goes from August through September.
Uh-huh.
And it's my solo. Like, it's my solo exhibit with the Black Artists Network.
Oh, great.
Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And they're at the 401 Richmond Street West building. Mm-hmm. It's a collection of, it's almost like an art Richmond and Spadina. I will be showing about, I'm going to say over like 30 pieces. It's a big one. I will be there.
Wow, yeah, that is a big one.
I will be producing these mammoth big paintings for that exhibit. Over, I'm going to say about over 24 by 48 inches.
Okay.
And I received a Canada Arts Council grant for that, plus a Toronto Arts Council grant.
Good for you. Fabulous.
With these paintings, these mammoth, epic storytelling type paintings. So I'm looking forward to that.
It sounds like you're going to be very busy over the next few months, right through the summer, actually, because that's three very busy exhibits, especially with your solo. So wishing you all the best with that. And just tell us before we wrap this up, Audra, where could we find you online? If anybody is on my website or the RS feeds, you can certainly see that in the link itself. But where can we find you online?
Online, I have a website. My website is audrat.com.
Mm-hmm.
I am also on Instagram.
Okay, great.
In search using Audra Townsend or Art by Audra T.
Fabulous. Well, there's an awful lot of places where you're going to pop up online with just a general Google search, which is great. Audra, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today, and to our listeners. Thank you for tuning in to Be Inspired, your ultimate resource for finding inspiration. If you are an artist with a story to tell, then I invite you to connect with me. Until next time, stay inspired and keep creating. And again, Audra, thank you so much.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me.